You're listening to a podcast from the Brookings Institution.
Boosting your exports and limiting your exports by pursuing a depreciating exchange rate can only work as long as there is one country doing that or a very few countries. But of course, you know, if all the countries or the major players all at the same time, you know, embark on that strategy, of course, the entire global trading system will collapse.
This is At Brookings, a weekly in-depth look at issues behind the news. This week, the dire consequences of currency manipulation.
China continues to undervalue its currency to make its exports cheaper and its coffers bigger, say some legislators and business leaders. It's a practice that harms U.S. competitiveness and impairs the growth of other emerging economies. From the White House to Capitol Hill, the U.S. is increasingly focused on the issue, and some predict a currency war. Non-resident senior fellow Domenico Lombardi says China's long-time currency manipulations are harmful indeed, but war is a long way off.
There is no doubt that the undervaluation of the Chinese currency has been openly pursued by the Chinese authorities. And this is really one of their pillars in terms of pursuing an export-led strategy, which has certainly contributed in terms of the dynamism of their own economy over the last few years. That, of course, is not enough to really escalate a currency war. The trigger was given by the announcement by the U.S. Federal Reserve to start yet another phase of hyper-expansionist monetary policy, the so-called QE2, which has, of course, triggered a reaction by a number of emerging economies which have been flooded by dollars. There have been pressures in terms of their own currency to appreciate.
Well, if we're not currently engaged, fully engaged in a currency war, then could one arguably say that we're standing at the precipice of a currency war?
Certainly there are some concerning signals, and these signals are the protracted stance of the Chinese authorities not to allow their exchange rate to be fully determined by the market, despite their public statements. There is a further complicating factor, which is right now the U.S. monetary policy, which is, of course, you know, designed to support the fragile economic recovery, but as a side effect, the effect of clearly weakening the dollar. In the U.S., there is really a great concern about the currency issue. In Europe, I would say this is voiced less strongly, but not because it is felt in some minor way. It's just that because there is no centrally defined political authority, because of how the monetary union is set up, these concerns do not easily feed into the policy-making machine at the EU level.
What's the real tension here?
I think the source of tension is, more on setting the boundaries, you know, on how far each player can go. There is a growing sense of frustration among U.S. companies that they don't feel there is a level playing field in China. The Chinese have established a number of restrictions in procurement rules, for instance, that do discriminate against foreign companies. And I think, rightly so, the administration is trying to pursue a broader agenda vis-à-vis the Chinese, not just by focusing on the narrow issue of the exchange rate, but by they are pursuing a broader agenda that would enable U.S. companies to benefit from establishing a more robust presence in China, and so that, you know, they can really benefit from the dynamism of this emerging economy.
Well, how does all of this affect emerging economies?
If the Chinese do not move forward and allow more flexibility in their exchange rate, clearly there is the risk that the relationship with other emerging economies will show some sign of tension. Clearly, these emerging economies so far have resisted from openly challenging the Chinese in that regard. But if the Chinese do not show any flexibility, then there is certainly the risk that we could see a breakup in the front of the emerging economies. I think this is really where the challenge lies nowadays. No one really knows at which point, we may observe this breakup, this tension erupting among emerging economies.
Has the G20 or the IMF had any real successes in dealing with this issue?
In the context of the recent G20 summit in Korea last November, it was agreed that China would become the number three shareholder of the IMF. And all the other main emerging economies, the so-called BRICS, will feature in the top 10 shareholders of the institution. And, of course, this is the intended objective of this reform in the governance of the IMF, is indeed to provide emerging economies with more more rights, a greater voice, but at the same time also demand from them greater responsibility and greater accountability for the management of the global economy.
Stay up to date with the latest research, learn about Brookings events, and search our directory of experts, all from your mobile device. To download Brookings for your BlackBerry, Android, or iPhone, go to brookings.edu/mobile.